Good morning. My name is Kavya Krishnan, and I'm going to be presenting on the research I did for my master's in Wisconsin, looking at the benefits of cover crops on labile carbon and nitrogen pools. So just a quick roadmap. I'm going to talk about the study itself, the objective we had, and then get into the more methodology results and conclusion. The reason we want to look at the system is Wisconsin, there are a lot of dairy systems that use continuous corn silage. So in a system like that, what you have is after the corn silage is harvested, that silage is fed to the cows in this dairy system. The manure is collected and stored and applied to the fields, usually in the fall, after which corn is planted, silage is harvested, and the system continues. The problem with a system like that is, as you can see, there's no above-ground biomass left onto the field. So you have huge potentials for erosion, for nitrate leaching, and just with no biomass available in the soil, there are no inputs going back in either. And that's where cover crops come in. So we've been talking about cover crops this whole session, so you might already know some of this, but the benefits address a lot of those same issues, including erosion prevention, nutrient scavenging, weed suppression, as well as habitat. We're looking specifically at cereal rye because it's extremely popular in the Midwest. It overwinters and it takes up and stores nitrogen in the biomass. So our objective was to look at this effect of winter rye as either a forage or as a cover crop on four different measures: potentially mineralizable nitrogen, permanganate oxidizable carbon, plant available nitrogen, and plant nitrogen uptake. So I'm going to talk about all four of those as we go through. A few people have presented from Wisconsin, so you might already know Wisconsin map before again. But my research was at the Arlington Agricultural Field Station, which is a little towards the south of Wisconsin in a plain of silt loam. And the experiment itself was a long-term study that's been established with the Integrated Pest Management and Crop Management Program. We had three cover crop treatments. We had rye for cover, and if I can get the pointer to work. That's a rye for cover over there, which has been chemically terminated. You have rye as a forage over here, which hasn't been harvested yet, but is harvested and taken off the field. And the cover crop after termination is incorporated back into the field. And you have no cover right up there in the middle. So you can see the bare ground. We soil sampled at two different depths, 0 to 15 centimeters and 15 to 30 centimeters, because we wanted to see if there's a depth effect. And we sampled for two growing seasons, three times in the first growing season, May, July, and September. And then because we thought that we didn't get enough information for that, 2016 we sampled five times, May through September. And I should mention that fall manure application is applied, so the dairy manure applied in the fall, and I'll talk about that, but no additional nitrogen is applied. There's a little bit of starter fertilizer with the corn itself and nothing else. You have manure applied late fall. Those numbers vary year by year depending on when we could get into the field. Winter rye is planted after that, allowed to overwinter until April when the rye is chemically terminated. In the cover crop plot, corn is planted in the cover crop and no cover plot first. And then rye is only harvested after that, about 2 weeks after, and then planted, corn is planted in those plots immediately after. So there is a 2 week difference about there. And the corn is harvested in about August or September. Just as a quick overview, that in December, there's the rye that's just getting up there. May, the rye has been terminated. 8th June, the corn's just getting there to about the wheat forage stage. And then September is about harvest. So now getting into those measures, the first measure we have is potentially mineralizable nitrogen, which is the organic fraction that's being converted to plants available, like that is going to be converted and can be mineralized, that's taken up by the plants. It's an anaerobic incubation that's at 40 degrees Celsius for 7 days. There's an initial extraction, a final extraction after 7 days, and that difference is the potentially mineralizable nitrogen. Kind of going to go over the graph a little. So 2015, we had no effects of PMN by the treatment. And up over here, you can see the sampling time. That was May, July, September in 2015. Potentially mineralizable nitrogen on the y-axis. And for the grass here, we looked at the three-way interaction. So we split up death and cover crop treatment as a separate treatment on this graph. So the blues are cover crops. There's 0 to 15 and 15 to 30 centimeters. Then you have rye forage, 0 to 15, 15 to 30 centimeters. And finally, no cover, which are the greens, 0 to 15 and 15 to 30 centimeters. And again, like I said, there is a depth effect here. You can see that all the 15 to 30 centimeters are significantly lower PMN than the 0 to 15 centimeters. But there is no effective treatment or time. However, when it comes to 2016, we see a lot more interactions. We see that rye as a cover and rye as a forage aren't really different throughout the season, but they are significantly higher than the no-cover treatment through most of the season, May through August. It's only September where we see no differences. And all these differences are, again, 0 to 15 centimeters. 15 to 30 centimeters, we were not seeing much significance. What's also interesting is that there is a temporal variation. So depending on when we sampled, PMN was quite high in May, goes down June to July, and then goes up again August and September. So depending on when you sample again, that does change. And the larger red letters are the significance when the treatments are averaged at a single sampling point. So for all the samples averaged in May, that's a high number. The second measure we wanted to look at was permanganate oxidizable carbon. So that's a chemical extraction with potassium permanganate, which is often used as a measure of labile carbon. It's simple and it's inexpensive and it's often proven to be a very good measure of soil health. And one of the reasons we were interested is because studies have shown that FOXC is correlated to PMN, and we wanted to see if the two measures would give us similar results. And we ran the correlation, and we found that they are quite significantly correlated. There is some difference, of course. As you can see, there is quite a bit of variation over here. But overall, that correlation was significant. As with PMN, we saw no significant results in 2015, so we weren't expecting to see that much either. However, in 2016, despite 7-day PMN showing us quite some significance in those results, we didn't see any of those same effects in POXC. So it's the same graph that we saw with PMN, with sampling time on the x-axis, POXC on the y-axis, and each of the treatments, cover crops 0 to 15, cover crop 15 to 30 centimeters, all six treatments at a single sampling point. And we did not see much the same time effect over time. Within a single sampling time, we did see slight effects in May, where you can see the rye forage treatment had higher POXC in the 15 to 30 centimeters than in 0 to 15 centimeters. And also in September, where the no cover showed higher POXC than the rye cover and forage 15 to 30 centimeters. But none of the same interesting effects that we saw in PMN. The third thing that we wanted to look at was plant available nitrogen, which is the sum of the nitrate and ammonium content in the soil. And we also wanted to look at yield and nitrogen removal. And we're going to talk about those two together for a reason. So the yield is just the silage corn that's harvested and it's being reported on a dry matter basis. And the total nitrogen content of this biomass is analyzed and it's reported as nitrogen removal. So looking at cover crop differences, 2015, again, we didn't see any significant results. But 2016, what we saw is the dashed line up over here is the no cover treatment. The bold line is cover crops, and the dotted line is rye forage. And this is again looking at the treatment. This is the average of each treatment depth. So 0 to 15 and 15 to 30 centimeters have been averaged here. And it's looking at the same results over time with plant available nitrogen on the y-axis. And here we see that no cover has significantly higher plant available nitrogen in May and June than the cover crop treatments. And in June, actually, all three treatments are different from each other. And then starting July to September, none of those treatments, they all just seem to level out. So there's no difference between the treatments again. And that does seem to have an effect on yield, because if you see 2015, there's a difference between the no cover yield, this is the corn silage yield, as rye forage treatment. The cover crop is a little middle, it's not significantly different from either. The rye forage and no cover yield is different, so not as much as you will see in 2016. And I'd also like to point out again that there was a 2-week difference between the rye forage being planted. And if you see nitrogen removal, again, the numbers are reasonably high, though significantly different from each other. If we look at 2016, the yield for the no-cover treatment, the corn hasn't really changed, but the silage yields in the other treatment have. So even with cover crops, now it's significantly different from the no-cover yield, and it's gone down from 2016. And the rye forage treatment in 2016, that corn silage yield is almost half the no-cover. And you see that same drop in nitrogen removal as well. So 2016, we saw like quite drastic yield cuts. And again, one of the things that we were looking at is this was looking at the effects on soil. So that's one of the reasons we looked at non-fertilized conditions. And most studies, including in the same site, have shown that when fertilized, those yield differences are insignificant or get much lower, at least. So I'm not going to say too much on that point, but that is an issue. So as a quick summary, cover crops do significantly benefit on increased PMN in continuous corn silage systems. PMN and poxy are correlated, but poxy may respond differently to treatment. So if when soil sampling, it's not enough to take just one. It is better to take both samples, to take both measures. Rye is both a cover and as a forage, reduces residual nitrogen in the spring. And the use of cover crops appears to be negatively affecting measures of yield and nitrogen removal. Just as a quick conclusion, use of cover crops with manures, especially in these continuous corn silage systems, do have a huge positive effect on soil health. However, yield decreases are possible if these are being planted in unfertilized conditions. And also, all of these measures, whether it's PMN, poxy, or plant-available nitrogen, undergo seasonal variation. So when using these as measures of soil health, there needs to be some consistency on when the soil is sampled, because you could get wildly differing results and treatment differences depending on when they're taken. And I think I should have some time for questions. Thank you.
Yeah, one or two questions before the break.
Up over there, I'm first. Sorry. I'm sorry, did you say the single fall application typical? Yeah, so in Wisconsin, it's usually like just applied once manure, it's usually applied in fall again. I don't know the exact statistics if anyone applies in spring or not, but it's almost always fall. But then normally, additional nitrogen fertilizer is added with the corn. Yeah, I think you
had a question. Terrific presentation. From an economic perspective, would the rye forage have counterbalanced the yield loss in silage corn enough to matter? Maybe I wasn't paying attention.
No, actually, that's one of the things I was hoping to get into, and then like we didn't actually do that analysis. If I had to take a quick guess, and I don't want to hold me to that because I haven't done it, maybe in 2015, when that yield difference isn't much, you'd get some economic benefit of the rye forage to be equal. 2015, with that almost half reduction in yield, I don't think you would get that benefit from rye forage if you were selling it. Thank you. Anyone else have a question?
What do you think is the mechanism behind the seasonal variation?
I mean, a simpler answer would be weather. Just we had 2016 was a lot of rain as well, so that might have affected how much nitrate was being leached, how much nitrogen was available. But beyond that, I don't have a perfect answer as to why it varies by the season. I mean, yeah, that's definitely a possibility. Especially with plants available nitrogen, I would say that's a huge possibility with like when it's being taken up. PMN and poxy, that might not change it. Like, I would have hoped it wouldn't change as much with that crop, but it might. So I'll have to study that further.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank
very
you.
Much.
Thank you.